Chapter 18. The events of 18 days. 1. From the 3rd to the 19th of September, Miss Alcliffe's tenderness towards Cytherea, between the hours of her irascibility, increased till it became no less than doting fondness. Like nature in the tropics, with her hurricanes and the subsequent luxuriant vegetation facing their ravages, Miss Alcliffe compensated for her outbursts by excess of generosity afterwards. She seemed to be completely won out of herself by close contact with a young woman whose modesty was absolutely unimpaired, and whose artlessness was as perfect as was compatible with the complexity necessary to produce the due charm of womanhood. Cytherea, on her part, perceived with honest satisfaction that her influence for good over Miss Alcliffe was considerable. Ideas and habits peculiar to the younger, which the elder lady had originally imitated as a mere whim, she grew in course of time to take a positive delight in. Among others were evening and morning prayers, dreaming over outdoor scenes, learning a verse from some poem whilst dressing. Yet try to force her sympathies as much as she would, Cytherea could feel no more than thankful for this, even if she always felt as much as thankful. The mysterious cloud hanging over the past life of her companion, of which the uncertain light already thrown upon it only seemed to render still darker the unpenetrated remainder, nourished in her a feeling which was scarcely too slight to be called dread. She would have infinitely preferred to be treated distantly, as the mere dependent, by such a changeable nature like a fountain, always herself, yet always another. That a crime of any deep dye had ever been perpetrated, or participated in by her namesake, she would not believe, but the reckless adventuring of the lady's youth seemed connected with deeds of darkness, rather than of light. Sometimes Miss Alcliffe appeared to be on the point of making some absorbing confidence, but reflection invariably restrained her. Cytherea hoped that such a confidence would come with time, and that she might thus be a means of soothing a mind which had obviously known extreme suffering. But Miss Alcliffe's reticence concerning her past was not imitated by Cytherea. Though she never disclosed the one fact of her knowledge, that the love suit between Miss Alcliffe and her father terminated abnormally, the maiden's natural ingenuousness on subjects not set down for special guard had enabled Miss Alcliffe to worm from her, fragment by fragment, every detail of her father's history. Cytherea saw how deeply Miss Alcliffe sympathized, and it compensated her, to some extent, for the hasty resentments of other times. Thus uncertainly she lived on. It was perceived by the servants of the house that some secret bond of connection existed between Miss Alcliffe and her companion. But they were woman and woman, not woman and man. The facts were ethereal and refined, and so they could not be worked up into a taking story. Whether, as old critics disputed, a supernatural machinery be necessary to an epic or no, an ungodly machinery is decidedly necessary to a scandal. Another letter had come to her from Edward, very short, but full of entreaty, asking why she would not write just one line of cold friendship at least. She then allowed herself to think, little by little, whether as he had not perhaps been too harsh with him, and at last wondered if he were really much to blame for being engaged to another woman. "Ah, brain, there is one in me stronger than you." She said. The young maid now continually pulled out his letter, read it and reread it, almost crying with pity the while, to think what wretched suspense he must be enduring at her silence, till her heart chid her for her cruelty. She felt that she must send him a line, one little line, just a wee line to keep him alive. Poor thing, sighing like Donna Clara, "Ah, were he now before me, in spite of injured pride, I fear my eyes would pardon before my tongue could chide." ... 2. September 20th. 3 to 4 p. It was the third week in September, about 5 weeks after Cytherea's arrival, when Miss Aldclyffe requested her one day to go through the village of Carriford and assist herself in collecting the subscriptions made by some of the inhabitants of the parish to a religious society she patronized. Miss Aldclyffe formed one of what was called a ladies' association, each member of which collected tributary streams of shillings from her inferiors, to add to her own pound at the end. Miss Aldclyffe took particular interest in Cytherea's appearance that afternoon, and the object of her attention was, indeed, gratifying to look at. The sight of the lithe girl, set off by an airy dress, coquettish jacket, flexible hat, a ray of starlight in each eye, and a war of lilies and roses in each cheek, was a palpable pleasure to the mistress of the mansion, yet a pleasure which appeared to partake less of the nature of affectionate satisfaction than of mental gratification. 8 names were printed in the report as belonging to Miss Aldclyffe's list, with the amount of subscription money attached to each. I will collect the first 4, whilst you do the same with the last 4, apostrophe said Miss Aldclyffe. The names of 2 tradespeople stood first in Cytherea's share. Then came a Miss Hinton. Last of all in the printed list was Mr. Springrove the elder. Underneath his name was penciled, in Miss Aldclyffe's handwriting, apostrophe Mr. Manston. Manston had arrived on the estate, in the capacity of steward, 3 or 4 days previously, and occupied the old manor house, which had been altered and repaired for his reception. Call on Mr. Manston, apostrophe said the lady impressively, looking at the name written under Cytherea's portion of the list. But he does not subscribe yet? I know it. But call and leave him a report. Don't forget it. Say you would be pleased if he would subscribe. Yes, say I should be pleased if he would. Repeated Miss Aldclyffe, smiling. Goodbye. Don't hurry in your walk. If you can't get easily through your task today, put off some of it till tomorrow. Each then started on her rounds. Cytherea going in the first place to the old manor house. Mr. Manston was not indoors, which was a relief to her. She called then on the 2 gentlemen farmers' wives, who soon transacted their business with her, frigidly indifferent to her personality. A person who socially is nothing is thought less of by people who are not much than by those who are a great deal. She then turned towards Peakhill Cottage, the residence of Miss Hinton, who lived there happily enough, with an elderly servant and a house dog as companions. Her father, and last remaining parent, had retired thither 4 years before this time, after having filled the post of editor to the Casterbridge Chronicle for 18 or 20 years. There he died soon after, and though comparatively a poor man, he left his daughter sufficiently well provided for as a modest fundholder and claimant of sundry small sums in dividends to maintain herself as mistress at Peakhill. At Cytherea's knock an inner door was heard to open and close, and footsteps crossed the passage hesitatingly. The next minute Cytherea stood face to face with the lady herself. Adelaide Hinton was about 29 years of age. Her hair was plentiful, like Cytherea's own. Her teeth equaled Cytherea's in regularity and whiteness. But she was much paler, and had features too transparent to be in place among household surroundings. Her mouth expressed love less forcibly than Cytherea's, and, as a natural result of her greater maturity, her tread was less elastic, and she was more self-possessed. As he had been a girl of that kind which mothers praise as not forward, by way of contrast, when disparaging those warmer ones with whom loving is an end, and not a means. Men of 42, said of her, a good sensible wife for any man, if she cares to marry, the caring to marry, being thrown in as the vaguest hypothesis, because she was so practical. Yet it would be singular if, in such cases, the important subject of merit should be excluded from manipulation by hands that are ready for practical performance in every domestic concern besides. Cytherea was an acquisition, and the greeting was hearty. Good afternoon. Oh yes, Miss Gray, from Miss Alcliffe's. I have seen you at church, and I am so glad you have called. Come in. I wonder if I have change enough to pay my subscription. ... She spoke girlishly. Adelaide, when in the company of a younger woman, always leveled herself down to that younger woman's age from a sense of justice to herself as if, though not her own age at common law, it was inequity. It doesn't matter. I'll come again. ... Yes, do at any time, not only on this errand. But you must step in for a minute. ... I have been wanting to come for several weeks. ... That's right. Now you must see my house lonely, isn't it, for a single person? People said it was odd for a young woman like me to keep on a house, but what did I care? If you knew the pleasure of locking up your own door, with the sensation that you reigned supreme inside it, you would say it was worth the risk of being called odd. Mr. Springrove attends to my gardening, the dog attends to robbers, and whenever there is a snake or toad to kill, Jane does it. ... How nice. It is better than living in a town. Far better. A town makes a cynic of me. The remark recalled, somewhat startlingly, to Cytherea's mind, that Edward had used those very words to herself one evening at Budmouth. Miss Hinton opened an interior door, and led her visitor into a small drawing room commanding a view of the country for miles. The missionary business was soon settled, but the chat continued. How lonely it must be here at night. ... Said Cytherea. Aren't you afraid? ... At first I was, slightly. But I got used to the solitude. And you know a sort of common sense will creep even into timidity. I say to myself sometimes at night, if I were anybody but a harmless woman, not worth the trouble of a worm's ghost to appear to me, I should think that every sound I hear was a spirit. But you must see all over my house. ... Cytherea was highly interested in seeing. I say you must do this, and you must do that, as if you were a child, remarked Adelaide. A privileged friend of mine tells me this use of the imperative comes of being so constantly in nobody's society but my own. ... I suppose she is right. Cytherea called the friend she by a rule of ladylike practice, for a woman's friend is delicately assumed by another friend to be of their own sex in the absence of knowledge to the contrary, just as cats are called she's until they prove themselves he's. Miss Hinton laughed mysteriously. I get a humorous reproof for it now and then, I assure you, she continued. Humorous reproof. That's not from a woman. Who can reprove humorously but a man? ... Was the groove of Cytherea's thought at the remark. Your brother reproves you, I expect, said that innocent young lady. No, said Miss Hinton, with a candid air. 'Tis only a professional man I am acquainted with. ... She looked out of the window. Women are persistently imitative. No sooner did a thought flash through Cytherea's mind that the man was a lover than she became a Miss Alcliffe in a mild form. I imagine he's a lover, she said. Miss Hinton smiled a smile of experience in that line. Few women, if taxed with having an admirer, are so free from vanity as to deny the impeachment, even if it is utterly untrue. When it does happen to be true, they look pityingly away from the person who is so benighted, as to have got no further than suspecting it. There now, Miss Hinton, you are engaged to be married. ... Said Cytherea accusingly. Adelaide nodded her head practically. Well, yes, I am, she said. The word engaged had no sooner passed Cytherea's lips than the sound of it, the mere sound of her own lips, carried her mind to the time and circumstances under which Miss Aldclyffe had used it towards herself. A sickening thought followed, based but on a mere surmise, yet its presence took every other idea away from Cytherea's mind. Miss Hinton had used Edward's words about towns. She mentioned Mr. Springrove as attending to her garden. It could not be that Edward was the man that Miss Aldclyffe had planned to reveal her rival thus. "Are you going to be married soon?" she inquired, with a steadiness the result of a sort of fascination, but apparently of indifference. "Not very soon still, soon. In less than 3 months?" said Cytherea. 2. Now that the subject was well in hand, Adelaide wanted no more prompting. "You won't tell anybody if I show you something?" she said, with eager mystery. "Oh no, nobody. But does he live in this parish?" "No. Nothing proved yet." "What's his name?" said Cytherea flatly. Her breath and heart had begun their old tricks, and came and went oddly. Miss Hinton could not see her face. "What do you think?" said Miss Hinton. "George?" said Cytherea, with deceitful agony. "No," said Adelaide. "But now, you shall see him first. Come here." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.